morning, church. Yes, I'm going to feed you today. But I'm not going to be feeding you 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. If you would like some food, there'll be lots of it at our house tonight to hopefully watch the Rams beat the Patriots. Yes. I'm not here to politically endorse any football team. I just kind of want to see that happen. But yes, you are all invited to our house tonight to watch the Super Bowl. This week we are starting something new. We are doing our Sunday, for the foreseeable future, we will do our Sunday evening service after potluck on the weeks that we have potluck. So I want to make it very, very clear that we're not moving church because of the Super Bowl. It just is a coincidence. So we still want you to come into church after potluck, which will be right after worship. So today we'll have worship, potluck, evening service, and then a few hours later we'll have fellowship at our home. Everyone is invited. Everybody is welcome. If you can come, come. If you want to come and bring some food, you can bring some more food. Our address is in the bulletin, so none of you should have an excuse on where is it. And everyone has Google now, right? You have something you want to add?
If people know that they're coming, they tend to let us know. I mean, if you don't know, you're coming, you until 4:45, but cool, come anyway. But if you already know you're coming, a rough count
would be helpful. All right. Now, before we get started, with that note, where are my 27 volunteers? How many of you finished your homework? I think I only saw 2 hands go down. That's very good. All right. 25 people in my class passed. Now I need 39 volunteers. No, I'm kidding. If you want to read the Old Testament, I'm not gonna ask for volunteers to read the Old Testament. Just go and read the Old Testament. I love the Old Testament. My master's degree, it was in a focus on Old Testament. I would love to have some very interesting theology discussions with you guys and get you some opinions on what you think about that. But today, we're going to be talking about the miracles of Jesus. We are in the 4th miracle of Jesus, and this is the feeding of the 5,000. So, pop quiz, what was the first miracle? Water to wine. Second miracle? Nope. Healing the official son. Third miracle? Healing the lame man. Okay, maybe you guys need to... Maybe you're just a little tired this morning. I'll go with tired. Alright, so we're on the 4th miracle in John, which is feeding the 5,000 people. And Dustin just read you the story, but in case you weren't paying attention, I'm going to kind of get you caught up a little bit. So at the end of the third miracle, it says the Jews start to persecute Jesus because he was working on the Sabbath and because he claimed that God was his father. You know, I think I might have a little animosity towards Jesus if I heard one of you claiming that God was your father the way Jesus was claiming he's his father. Yeah, he's my father too, but not probably in the way that Jesus was claiming it. So they start to persecute him, and they seek a way to kill him, as it says in the middle of chapter 5. And then John tells us this really interesting bit of Jesus giving a dialogue about his authority and where his authority comes from. And if that's not clear, it's God. But there are many people who witness that authority, such as God, John, and even Moses. Because, you know, those Jews, they really like Moses for some reason. Then it goes on to say that as Dustin began to read, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias, near the time of Passover. Okay, we've already kind of talked about Passover already, and this was in the second miracle. So that means between this miracle and the second miracle, almost a full year has passed. Did Jesus do other miracles? Yes, it said he did other miracles. John just chose to focus on these 7 because they're important. And this one is especially important because this is one of the few events that is recorded in all 4 Gospels. There's only a few events recorded in every single Gospel, and this is one of them. I think the resurrection is another one, and I'd have to look up the others. So Jesus goes to this place, and a lot of people are following him, and a great crowd of people. And so Jesus says, you know what, I bet they're hungry. Philip, should we feed these people? And he says, the text says that Jesus, already knowing the answer, does this to test Philip anyway. I think those are the worst kind of tests. So Philip does what I think is the correct thing. He looks at the cost. He looks at the crowd. He probably has a general idea of how much money they have. And he says, well, maybe this much money might give them all a little bit of food. Then Andrew steps in, because I like Andrew, because anytime Andrew says something, it's something really insightful. And he says, you know, there's this boy over here, he's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. Maybe there's something that can be done about it. I don't know. You're Jesus. I'm Philip. Or Andrew. So Jesus says, okay, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to take the people, have all the people, sit down in groups of people, and I'm going to bless the food, and we're going to pass out the food, and everybody's going to eat until they're full. And then I want you to collect all that leftovers. So they do that. Everybody eats. They're hungry. Everybody's full. It's the first buffet without chicken. And the last one. And everybody looks at him and he says, and everyone's amazed. Look at this. Look at what Jesus can do. He made all this food. Let's make him king. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's make Jesus king. And so they take him to make him king, and then Jesus is like, no, I'm not going to let that happen, and he walks away. Now, that's the JP translation. There's a reason you're not going to find that in any books. But you get the idea of the story, right? I mean, it's just a very simple story about Jesus performing miracles. All right, class. Let me tell you the words I know you all love to hear. Close your books. Take out a blank sheet of paper. It's time for a test. Oh, I hated this in class. This was the worst thing I could hear in school. You guys agree? Did you ever like hearing this phrase? Who likes, oh, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'll still talk to you. So you get this, and you get this anxiety. But what does the text tell us? The text tells us that Jesus asked Philip this question. Where are we to buy bread that so these people may eat? And it says so the answer is clear to you, the reader. He's testing Philip. And I don't like this. It just bothers me. Like, Jesus, why did you ask Philip that question? You know the answer. You probably know what he's going to say, and yet you're doing it anyway. I feel like this is kind of setting him up to fail. But no, it's not. It's all done with a purpose. But other than that, it's, what's the word for it? I mean, if you just look at it on its value, it's, I don't know, I think I talked about this last week. It's an innocent question. You guys remember something about that? That innocent... Ooh. That's what happens when I get excited. You guys remember me talking about these innocent questions last week? Was there another innocent question Jesus asked somebody? Like, this one? Do you want to be healed? Okay, yeah, sure, Jesus, I want to be healed. Okay, John Paul, how are we going to feed these people? You know, I think I got to go to the bathroom, Jesus, I'll get back to you in a second. it's an interesting question, but I feel like there's something so much more, it's so deeper. How do I answer this question? And you look at the two, look at how similar they are and how each one approaches the question. The lame man, the disciple, didn't answer the question, considers the question, deflects blame, gives excuses, considers the crowd, determines it cannot be done, and what is the result? They both fail the test. Sorry, thanks for playing, here's your consolation prize. Well, when Jesus gives you a prize, it's a good prize. And luckily for both of these people, they both got a lesson, but they also both got something much, much greater. And that was grace. Even though they failed their test, God gave them something so much better than that. And that was the ability to not only be healed, be forgiven, but also make better decisions. But I really want to focus on Philip as opposed to the lame man. I talked about him last week. This week I want to focus on Philip. Because when we look at this story, we're all told throughout all of our Christian teachings, especially when we look at Philippians chapter 2, we want to identify with Jesus. But here, we're meant to identify with Philip. We are very much meant to identify with Philip, especially because everything we're taught. I know a lot of you, you've gone to college, you've gone to high school, you're even teachers, educators, you've done something, you apply this thing that we're supposed to learn as adults, and it's called critical thinking, right? How many people here are critical thinkers? Okay, about 10 of you. Good. This is how we want, this is how society expects us to be, critical thinkers. We use higher learning and higher education and higher thought process to solve difficult problems. And so Philip does something here that I think everyone in the room would probably do. He looks at the situation. Okay, there are 5,000 men. Now, if I take that literally, there's probably somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 people in this situation, at this place. Sometimes it does say men to refer to people, but literally there's anywhere from 5,000 to 20,000 people here with Jesus right now. Okay, how much would it cost to feed 5,000 to 20,000 people? Well, that depends on your definition of feeding, right? I can give you a little bit of food, or I can make you so you're no longer hungry. And so how much would it cost to even give you all a little bit of food? Philip estimates it's going to cost 200 denarii to feed these people some food. A denarii is defined in the Bible as one day's labor. So you work for a whole day, you got a single denarii. It's estimated to be about $1.25 today. Not a lot of money. And so if everybody worked for one day's labor, you would get 200 denarii in 8 months. So it would basically take you 8 months of work to feed this crowd of people. Did they have 200 denarii? We don't know. But I'm going to guess Philip knew, and Philip knows with what they have, it's just not possible. And even if they did have the money, let's entertain this thought that they did have the money. Where would this food come from? They're in the middle of a hill, maybe a mountain. It's not like they can go down to Walmart and pick up like 10 grocery carts worth of food. They would have to go. Most of this food was made daily. It wasn't prepared or saved from another place. Yes, you could go to a market, but I doubt even a market could have supplied this group of people. The solution, it's just not possible. If you could think of another way, tell me, how is this possible? It's not. Certainly not at all. But I have to imagine Jesus. I identify with Philip in this story, but I have to imagine what Jesus is thinking here. Because Jesus knows exactly what Philip saw. What did Philip see? Well, Philip saw that water turn to wine, didn't he? Yes, he was there. Not you, Philip, the other Philip. He saw the healing of an official's son. He saw the healing of the lame man. He saw all the other signs and miracles as he was with Jesus. Why give this answer? Because he has to know that there's a reason Jesus is asking him this question. If Jesus asks you a question, there's a reason he's asking you that question. If Jesus tells you to do something, there's a reason he's telling you to do something. And it's probably much more than you think there is. So Philip sees this situation. He saw everything that he's seen up until this point. And this is the answer he gives Jesus. And this is ultimately why he fails the test. But there's another character introduced in this story. Sorry, I skipped ahead. So Philip says the 200 denarii story. But there's another character in this story. And this character is Andrew. And Andrew is almost exactly like Philip. Because he saw the first three miracles. He saw the other signs and wonders. And he saw the other miracles. Like blah, 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 blah. Okay, getting too excited. But there's another thing he saw. And he saw the baptism of Jesus. or the John's testimony of Jesus. I'm 99% certain he saw the baptism of Jesus because of the events described in the Bible. He saw all these things, and he gives a much better answer. So he's almost there. He gives this answer. There's this boy. He has 5 loaves of barley and 2 loaves of fish. So he's got this great... Hi, I'm John Paul. I'm a dyslexic, and I'm really messing up a lot today. Please forgive me. Please give me grace. Yes. So he sees the boy. He invites the boy to Jesus. He has 5 loaves and 2 fish. Well, okay, when I think of 5 loaves and 2 fish, I probably think of a decent-sized fish and a loaf of bread about this big. But it's a boy. He probably had a loaf of bread that's probably a biscuit. Maybe not even much bigger than a biscuit. So you're really looking at a meal that wouldn't fill up a single adult. So Andrew's got this idea. Okay, I've seen all these things. There's this other thing here that I know about. Maybe you can do something about it. But he's not quite there yet because of this other part of his sentence. But what are they for so many? No, Andrew, you were so close. You almost had it. And then you blew it with the second part of your sentence. So you too fail the test. You don't get to pass. Thanks for playing, Andrew. Here's your consolation prize. No, so close. But what are they for so many? Andrew, you saw all these things that Jesus saw. And you were almost there. You said, Jesus, I got this solution for you, but I'm not sure what you can do about it. What do you mean you're not sure what he can do about it? You may not know what the outcome will be, but you know exactly what he could do about it. So, I've been doing this the last few weeks, and I kind of really like this, and this is the reality is section of my sermons. The reality is that people are needy. I bet there's many people in this room who are needy. As we see, 20,000 people are on the hillside because they wanted Jesus to help them. Or they heard that he might... They didn't come for food. They came because they saw or heard what he had done in the past. They were probably even going there to get healing themselves. But he had compassion on them and he wanted to feed them. More about that later. 2,000 years, not much has changed, has it? We have 3 million people a year, children a year, die from malnutrition. 1.2 billion people live without electricity. You don't really need electricity to live, but it certainly makes life easier. 750 million lack clean drinking water. That is something you do need. And 3 billion... live, that's about a little bit less than half of the world's population, lives on less than two denarii a day. People are needy. What could I possibly do to help them? Well, the reality is, we as the people are inadequate to meet their needs. We are not good enough. That's why I relate to Philip. That's why I relate to Andrew in this story. It's why I fail, is because I am inadequate to solve this problem. I cannot do it. Philip's facts are correct. There's nothing wrong with Philip's answer and the information he gives him. There's something wrong with the answer itself, but the answer itself is not wrong factually. Andrew's answer is also correct. There's a boy there. He's got the food. Maybe Jesus can do something about it, but I don't think so. But we want to put our own solutions into the problem. And here I actually had to go to a different version of this in another gospel to find this verse. Because I was surprised it actually wasn't in John's gospel. In Mark, it said that the disciples wanted to send the people away so they can get the food on themselves. So the story never says that they couldn't get the food. The story said that Jesus had compassion on them and wanted to feed them. But they did not have the means or the way to feed them. So the best thing for them was to send them away. Right? Maybe he could have fed some of them, but certainly not all of them. I can't imagine myself or anyone else in this room answering this question differently. And if you have a different answer, I want you to come and tell me about it. But also, the reality is, and this is the most important part of this story, is that why I and Philip and Andrew and everyone else on this planet is insufficient to handle this problem, Jesus is not only more sufficient, He is the solution. Jesus is the answer to this problem. He knows when we need to be pushed. He knows when He says, get off your bottom, go and do this work. There's a story I heard a few years ago, I think when I was in grad school, about this orphanage. And this orphanage, their pay was short for the week, and they were not going to be able to feed their children for the next week because they couldn't get the pay to come faster. They couldn't borrow any more money. And that night, a baker came in the middle of the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, knocked on their door, and they said, God motivated me to bring you food. Nobody asked him. But he brought a whole truckload of food to this orphanage so that they could survive for the next week. He didn't even know who they were. They didn't know who he was. There was no connection. But God motivated him to do it. He knows, he said, hey, Mr. Baker, it's time to get up. I need these orphans fed. He knows when it needs to be done. As he also tells the people to sit down. You want the food? Sit down. That's what John says. You're going to get the food, you need to sit down. God knows what needs to be done. God knows when it's time to start. Jesus saw the crowd. He had compassion on them. It didn't say they needed food, but He knew that He had to feed those people. And when He saw them coming. But He also knows when it's time to walk away. Jesus didn't let them make Him king. He walked away. Because at some point, you have to teach the people to feed themselves. I think we have a very famous parable of that. Give a man a fish. Feed him for a day. Teach a man a fish. Feed himself for life. Make him an avid, make him a good hunter. That's why I'm just going to go to Dustin if I ever need to learn to fish. That way he can just fish for me because I know he likes to do it. Oh, he's not even in here. So Jesus knows when it's time to walk away. He also isn't, this is our biggest resource, is we are bound by the resources of this planet. But Jesus is not. Jesus is not bound by the resources of the planet. We ask for money because we need the money to survive. But Jesus doesn't. Jesus says, Jesus takes what He has and He says, God bless it. And through that blessing, through God's blessing, the food multiplies. That's how unbound Jesus is. And He could probably even be more unbound than that. I'm going to talk about that a little bit here in a second. But frankly, Jesus also has more compassion than us. What's the disciple's solution? Send him away. What's Jesus' solution? No, you feed him. Because the truth is, with faith, the disciples could have done the exact same thing that Jesus did. So really what they're looking here is a lack of faith. Jesus says, you feed them. That must mean that Jesus knows they could have done it. We can do it, but we think, because we lack faith, that we can't do it. Finally, what I also think is really important about this story is that Christ uses people who are willing to yield to Him. As we see in the story of healing the official's son, Christ didn't need to be there to heal the official's son. Or the story with the centurion, who was not mentioned in John's gospel. He didn't need to be there to heal the son. But what's the difference between the centurion and the lame man? Is the centurion had such faith that he believed that Jesus could do it. And he even said, I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel. And who is he talking about? A Roman citizen. Probably a Gentile. all this faith in Israel, and I'm finding it in a Roman citizen. That's where the faith is. Jesus does not need to be there. Jesus does not need to be there to feed... Jesus does not need the materials of the boy to feed the crowd. How did God feed all those people in the wilderness for so many years? By making it appear on the ground where they were to collect. Jesus could have done the exact same thing. But he didn't. He used the resources of the boy because the boy was willing to submit. He used the layman because the people would come to him. There's always a grand purpose. You don't need a giant gesture to get your point across. Sometimes the smallest of things make the difference. And these are very small things. But they have the most lasting impression. Like I said, this is one of the only few events that is covered in all four Gospels. And I can hear that kind of guy, I'm sorry. But every single one of those disciples remembered this event. And they chose to write about this event. That is how important it is. So I know you're getting hungry. I can smell the food. I'm getting really hungry too. So I'm going to wrap it up now. There's a lot of work that can be done. I bet you could probably, once I said that people are needy, all of you immediately thought of somebody, right? You probably thought of some situation, maybe even thought of yourself. There's so much work that can be done. As Jesus said in Mark 14, the poor are always going to be with you. But a lot of times you're going to feel like Philip and you're going to feel like Andrew. You're going to feel like you do not have the inadequate, you are inadequate, you do not have the resources. You look at the resources you had and you know that they're not sufficient. But the answer isn't necessarily something that requires critical thinking. The answer is very, very simple. It's the same answer I give to you every single week that I come up here. Is the answer is you need to have the faith in Jesus, the faith that He asks you to have in Him every single day, because He looks at your inefficiencies and He looks at you and He uses you and your abilities, and He will glorify God through those works. So don't ever stop showing compassion. Don't ever stop helping the needy. But don't do so because it's the right... But don't do so because you feel like you have to do it. But do so because it's the example that our Lord and Savior set before us. If there's anything I can do to help you in your time of need, or one of the elders, or anyone here, or if you would like to respond to this message in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing this song.